So I think to start with, what I'm trying to do is just get you to close your eyes and start to imagine a few things, okay? So if everybody can close your eyes and just start to picture yourself at home, and you're just waking up in the morning on your, and you're going to be going to work, okay? So I want you to picture where you wake up, your room, who's around you. What's the first thing you do? Do you go and make yourself a coffee or get some breakfast on your way, okay? Think about that. Picture your room, your front room, your walk to your car. You get in your car, you drive, or do you go on the train or the bicycle? Picture that commute. Think about it. Have it clearly in your head. When you arrive, your hospital is busy. It's really full. Like, there's patients everywhere. Picture that. Picture how you feel when you arrive at work. And what do? You go and say hello to your colleagues. You go to your office, check some emails. Maybe you grab a drink there and say hello to people. But try and have that in your head, those images and what you're sort of seeing and feeling as you go through all that. Yourself walking through the corridors as you approach your place of work. And we'll come back to some of those images a little bit later. So try and keep that going around in your head a little bit. So one of the questions people always want to know is, why on earth would I go to Gaza at this particular moment? Essentially, probably mostly to do with this woman here. This is Sanaa Rajab. She's a nurse by trade and works as a liaison officer for the Red Cross. Incredibly inspirational person who looked after me magnificently during my 9 months there in 2016-17 to be on the whole Gaza Strip. Would go to the beach and play with their kids. She would cook me dinner. I didn't have food. Fantastic person. Whenever the one time she managed to get out of Gaza, I took her around London and showed her sights and sounds, and just stayed very closely in touch. So someone I would consider a great friend lives in Gaza. And during that first sort of week of the war in Gaza, was someone who was very much on my mind and thinking, what's happening to her? What's happening to her kids? Where are they? What's going on? A really inspirational person. She worked during the first of the two previous wars, heavily pregnant, wandering around in war zones, going to help people. In a place that's really difficult for women generally, Gaza. She has suffered quite a lot. She's very outspoken, so gets put in her place quite a lot, but continues to speak out for herself and for other women. So a really inspirational person. During that first week of the conflict after October 7th, I had a lot of guilt about not knowing what was going on and not being able to help and things like that. And then, so this is a good friend, healthcare worker, 2 a.m. got the call, you must evacuate, 3 kids in the street running, they don't know where to go, there's no transport. Since then, has been displaced 3 more times. She went to live with family in the middle area. That place was became under attack, so she moved to a shelter, a Red Cross shelter, with her entire family. This is the Happiness Hall where they lived, until that area too came under attack a few weeks ago, and they've moved somewhere in Rafah. Every day during this war, again, she has gone to work whichever hospital was nearest. So she was in Shifa for a while during the first part of the war, then in European Gaza Hospital. Gets up, goes to work, leaves her kids in this place with other people looking after them to go and try and help. None of her stuff around, house has been destroyed, yet they've somehow managed to keep going. It's the reality of being a nurse. I don't know where she is at the moment, haven't heard from her for a couple of weeks. We're somewhere in the south, I hope. So at some point, after a few weeks in Egypt, after the start of the war, trying to get into Gaza, me and 12 other village idiots managed to get permission to go into Gaza. The reasons for people going, other people reasons for going, I think some genuinely didn't know what they were getting themselves into. I think some people are quite vain about the idea of working in a war zone. Some people just true professionals who know what they're doing, and some of us who are just a bit lost and trying to help. But lots of different reasons for why people would go, not just the sorts of things that drove me to do it. And people often ask, is this the the toughest place you've worked, and I think it is. It's having worked in Yemen under siege in Hodeidah, worked in northern Nigeria where we've been shot at, lots of other conflict zones. This place, at the moment, Gaza, there's nowhere to go. And for all organisations, there is no safety. I worked for MSF. This logo, everybody thinks, protects you wherever you go. This is the remnants of two of our incredibly brave staff who went to try and rescue 35 other staff members in the north of Gaza and came under attack. This was a fully deconflicted movement, so the IDF knew exactly where these people were and where they were going. And the bus was hit by a tank shell. They made a run for their lives, and this is what happened to the cars. Thankfully, from this particular incident, nobody died. They evacuated 3 days later. But we've had other severe incidents, and I think it's one of the few places where, like I say, international staff truly are at the same level of risk as the locals. Obviously, MSF have had two guest houses hit most recently, just the other day, in Al Mawasi, the safe area where we're all encouraged to go and live and work. As the safe zone, MAP UK have had their house hit. The UN have had a house hit. The UN have lost one staff member per day on average in this conflict. So there is no safe space, truly. This is something we were told as we went into Gaza, was the mantra: there is no safe space in Gaza. That is true for everyone. And I think all healthcare workers, as we've seen most recently in Nasser Hospital, it happened in Shifa, it happened in Al Alda, it's happened in Al Aqsa Hospital in the middle area. There is no safe place to provide healthcare for anyone. Everywhere is a risk. So who is still there, and who, and what are they doing? There are amazing people like this. Some of you may recognise this guy. This is Dr. Ahmed Mograbi, who is very popular on Instagram. He rages against the world on a regular basis. He's a very skilled plastic surgeon, and he ran the burns unit at Nasser Hospital, where MSF had worked before. So I didn't know him before I went, but I knew the burns unit in Nasser Hospital, so we went and started working with him. This is him now, living in the corridors, essentially outside of his burns unit that he used to run with his family. This is the daughter of another family member who was killed, who his family have adopted. So this is what his daily life is. He wakes up in his corridor, outside his burns unit, with his family all around him, a few bits and bobs trying to keep them going. And he goes to work, and he works every day. You would have seen he left Nasser Hospital at the very last moment. On his way out of the checkpoint, he's put a video on recently explaining how he went through, and one of our other colleagues, Rami, the nurse, head nurse of the burns unit, was taken captive. These people stayed in Nasser Hospital providing healthcare till the bitter end, we could say. And what were they facing? I mean, wounds like we've never encountered. This guy doing plastic surgery, highly skilled, having to live like this, but every day walking across the compound to come and do amazingly skilled surgery. But what did he face? What do you do with that? This is part of the daily experience of this poor man. Not only is he displaced, he's lost, his house was destroyed, his place, he had a private business doing some plastic surgery on the side, that has gone. He's living in a hospital corridor, and every day he gets up and goes to work and faces this. This is what they're dealing with every single day.
What is it? I can't
even imagine. It's been exploded.
Is that a child's bone?
Yeah. So that's the reality of what a super skilled plastic surgeon is having to do. He sent me that photo to say, what do I do? What do I do with this? I'm not a plastic surgeon, I can't help, but we send it out to the reference and things and say, what can they do anything? Of course you can't. And think that child, if they survive, which they won't, they'll get infected, they're living on the ground somewhere. If they survive, they will have years and years of rehab. They'll never walk again. And that's the reality for half the survivors of everything that's happening at the moment, are going to spend years and years in rehab. Their wounds get infected, limbs that have been saved will be lost, lives that were saved will be lost because of the ongoing difficulties they face. inability to rehab people, the inability to stay infection free. Shortly after my arrival, I think about 10 days into my time there, there was a humanitarian pause in the fighting, which was sort of glorious, in that it felt like the end, and it felt like everybody was much safer, and things were going to get better. Reunions happened. This is Abu Abed, who, again, you may know if you follow this conflict very closely. He's been on Channel 4 lots. He's often asked to report about things for NSF point of view, medical director in Gaza for 25 years. Like, we got the band back together, you know, we came out, we started to say, great, this is wonderful. Surgery went up, we were able to move, we were able to get fuel, we were able to get more supplies in. Everything sort of started to feel better and lighter for a day or two. And then the people who'd been trapped in the north started to come out. Okay, so the hospitals filled up. One day, 600 patients were evacuated to European Gaza Hospital in one day. 600 patients with wounds, which meant they couldn't be discharged. So, and all those people who hadn't had healthcare for the entire time, suddenly it's safe for them to come out. All the heart attacks, all the strokes, all those things are now. So that for the healthcare workers, it was like a very bittersweet thing. And also the news of their houses being destroyed was able to be found. One last guy. So this is Dr. Mohammed Kandil. He's the head of the emergency department in Nasser Hospital, trained in Qatar in emergency medicine and critical care. Just an everyday guy, just wants to live a normal life. So I'm going to ask you to go back to your image of your work to walk to work. Okay, so you wake up and you open your eyes and something isn't quite right. And you start to, your eyes start to focus and you realise you're not in your own bed. You're lying on the floor in the corridor outside your office on a mattress or on a coat. And you look around and your family are lying there. Some people that you recognise and you think, oh, that's a bit weird. And then you suddenly remember, oh yeah, we don't live at home anymore. We don't have a home anymore. We've been displaced. This is the safest place we can find. And you think, where are my kids? And you go to your office quickly, which is just there, and check, okay, they're a bit safer in there, so you've left them sleeping in there. And you think, well, I'll go to work, as I know people need me, and that's what I do. You walk along the corridors, and everywhere you walk are people. Some are injured, some are just living there. People with bad wounds that you can see, some have dressings, some have cannulas. You think about getting your coffee, your morning breakfast, and then you remember, ah, no, there's no coffee here anymore. Maybe I'll get a sweet tea later on when stuff becomes available. There's no bread yet, and I don't have time to go and queue for 4, 5, 6 hours to get it. Hopefully someone will give me some bread when they queue later on. So I'll go without breakfast. And you're on your way, you're the emergency department director, and you are asked to go to that lovely emergency department that we showed you first that Nasser Hospital had. And the call goes out. Well, first thing you notice is that a very loud noise occurs and the building shakes. And you think, oh shit, there's something bad going to happen here. And you know something's landed, a bomb has landed very nearby. And in a couple of minutes, things are going to all go to hell. So the call goes out, all doctors to the emergency department. This is what you see.
Aww.
This is his daily reality. Not once a day, not twice a day, 4, 5, 6 times a day, this can happen. You've run out of beds, those trolleys have gone, all the equipment you had has been used to death, all you've got is floor space, all you've got is the goodwill of other people risking their lives to stay with you and help. That's the reality of being a healthcare worker in Gaza in this war, is that. I had the misfortune to experience this maybe 4 or 5 times. I don't wish that on anybody. A few people with me had the misfortune to experience it even more. And one guy has taken a bit of a break from medicine as a result of this sort of stuff. This is what they deal with every day. For months now. 3 months. That's what they face. And I'm going to wrap up just by saying, look, we're here to talk about Gaza and Palestine. Remember, this is the lived experience of many healthcare workers all over the world. There are many conflicts, maybe not quite as active as this at the moment, but this is happening all across the globe. And please don't forget that that is the lived experience of healthcare workers all over the world in conflict. And finally, what, if anything, I think you're going to hear about some more practical solutions to things you can do to get involved a little bit later, but what do we need? I mean, we all know we need a ceasefire. We need the release of all hostages and prisoners of war from both sides. We need increased humanitarian access, and we need more commercial access to get the economy regoing. It's going to take decades and decades to rebuild what Gaza was, but to give these people a chance of life. And the one thing I took away from it was when I was there, and about 3 or 4 weeks in, had a conversation with one of the UN team who are doing stuff I've never seen. Without the UN, this would be far worse. They are an incredible organisation in Gaza, doing amazing things. And I sort of felt a bit down and said, like, what we're doing, like, you know, we're peeing into the sea with this, aren't we? We're not doing anything here. What can we achieve? And they replied, she replied, all we can do is keep showing that we will not give up. We will not give up. The world has not forgotten you. The world will not give up. Mm-hmm. So thank you for coming tonight, because I think that's what that shows, is the world is not forgetting. We're not giving up. And as bad as it all is, that's what we've got to do, is just try and keep going and keep trying to help these poor people. Sorry for the images.